Do you suspect that your roommate has an eating disorder and is lying to you about it? Or do you yourself suffer from an eating disorder and live with someone and feel like you have to lie to them about it? I've been there. This is your host, Amy Geckel, and we are here today with entry 8 of the Eating Disorder Diaries, a podcast about my 16-year experience with bulimia and my life in recovery. In today's episode, I sit down with Kristen Epling. I call her Christy, my longtime friend, my adolescent partner in crime, the sill to my bill. If you've watched The Simple Life with Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie, you know what I'm talking about. But anyways, she was also someone that I lived with in several different places and in several different stages in my battle with bulimia. In previous entries, I've honed in on the massive amount of shame I felt for engaging in my eating disorder behaviors for so long. And although I knew that people in my life knew I was suffering to an extent, I could never admit in the moment when I was struggling. I would always lie about it. I would say I was fine. I want today's episode to bring light to these types of experiences that impact people with eating disorders. In the episode, Christy and I talk about how we would have approached the situation differently in retrospect, given the tools we have now. And we talk about how critical it is to place your egos aside, communicate with each other, and set boundaries with the person you're living with. As two self-proclaimed, extremely non-confrontational people, this was not something we did when we were living together 10 years ago. And oh my God, by the way, I can't believe it's been an entire decade since we've moved in together. That's wild to me. But anyways, if you're like us and you don't know how to talk to your roommate, whether you're the one suffering or you suspect they are, I hope the conversation that we have today helps you out. I put myself in the shoes of me at 20 years old, not knowing how to effectively communicate with others, especially my roommates. And I think about how difficult it would be for me at the time to tell my roommate what was up. If that sounds like you, maybe this podcast episode is one that you can share with your roommate to open up that conversation because it's important. Before we get into the episode, I do want to say that this episode is in honor of Matt Epling, Kristen's late brother. Matt lost his life in the summer of 2002, and his love still shines so brightly through Kristen and through her parents, Kevin and Tammy. Christy gave so much thought and love and introspection in this interview, and I know that her brother and her parents are so proud of her, as am I. I can't wait for you to listen. So that's enough for me. Let's get into entry 8. My roommate has an eating disorder. What do I do? Christy, welcome to the Eating Disorder Diaries.
Hi.
Hi. I'm very excited to have you on. This is my first time having a friend on, so I'm excited to see how the conversation flows. Christ, I call her everything. Lately, you've been going by Kristen, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, you said yes. I call her Christ mostly. She's in my phone, all capital letters, Christ. We've been friends since we were 9, and we've had a lot of shared experiences in our lives. One of them is living together in several different places. And there's so many places that we could start with this conversation, but I guess I'll just start with, can you remember how many places we've lived together?
Yeah. We lived in 3 different apartments together, 3 very different apartments. 2 of them were in our hometown. 1, I only lived with you for a summer. And then we moved into a tiny little 2-bedroom apartment with 3 girls, which was kind of a nightmare, but it was fun. It wasn't until we moved to like outside of our hometown to the metro city area that we kind of learned how to be actual roommates, I guess, when we had careers and jobs and we weren't just in college partying and
Okay, that's so funny that you say that. So I think, and I don't know about you, but we were both kind of starting to get a taste of independence at that time. So I guess, what was I like as a roommate in college and post-college?
Even though they're a couple of years apart, I feel like they were drastically different. College, you were going to Michigan State, so like you had a lot on your plate, more stress. You had finals, you had tests, you had all of that intertwined with everything else. I think college was hard. It was a time where neither of us knew the direction that we were going to go. So as a roommate in college, it was just, it was complicated. Like, I think we had the baggage of our entire friendship, but then we also had like the stress of school added into everything. And then, I don't know, post-college, it was just different. Like, you had a career that you were learning how to have a career, because we didn't have, we just had like little side jobs, you know, like I worked at a grocery store, you worked at American Eagle.
Yes.
So it's different having a career and having to be professional and go to the office. And so it's just, it's different, but we're still so young. So we still had so much discovering to do, so much learning to do. But I think the post college years, they were still a struggle for sure, like roommate wise. But I think we were better roommates just because we were more of adults versus these kids in college.
Yeah, I think we really didn't have this open means of communication with each other about any type of normal conflict that comes with cohabitating in the same space with someone. So how do you think living together impacted our friendship?
I think it complicated things for sure. We're very different people. We handle things differently. Our personalities are different. The things we enjoy even are different. So I think having that layer of like being really, really close friends and then becoming roommates, it complicated things, and it complicated the way we communicated with each other. It complicated the way that we addressed one another, the way that we handled conflict, because now we're not just friends. Now we're two people living in the same place.
Right.
And we had to figure out how to handle that conflict, but still be able to live in the same place. And I don't think we always did a very good job at that.
Amy here. I want to dive into what Christy just said a bit more, because I agree with her. We didn't always do a good job at communicating with one another when we lived together. I think at most points we just downright avoided each other, or at least avoided a conversation about what was bothering us, about setting boundaries. And boundaries are critical to protect yourself, but also to protect your relationship, especially when someone's dealing with mental health issues. I wish we had known at the time that setting boundaries wouldn't have meant like we had a failure in our friendship or something. In retrospect, I think it could have actually given us a good structure and a good opening for conversations and communication that we just didn't have. And I think about us being 20 years old and living together, and not that we were immature, I think we didn't want to step on each other's toes or maybe hurt someone's feelings by saying what was bothering us. Fortunately for us, we'd been friends for so long before living together that our friendship was able to persevere through those hard times. But had we set those boundaries and had those tough conversations, I know things could have been better for us at the time. And look, I know it can feel cringe to have those conversations, but I wish I had had those with her and honestly with anyone else I'd lived with, because I had other people in my life that I lived with as well, and we don't talk anymore. And there were also a lot of things left unsaid there and a lot of boundaries that were never set. I'm going to use the rest of the episode to refer to an article on the blog Balance titled 5 Tips for When Your Roommate is in Eating Disorder Recovery, written by Samreen Khan. The article gives 5 tips for how you can support a roommate who's in eating disorder recovery. I'll start with the first one now and dive into the other 4 later on in the episode. Any guesses on the first tip? It's establishing boundaries. So how do we do this? I suggest starting by asking your roommate to have a conversation about setting boundaries as a preemptive measure. We've all heard the stories about people living together and never talking again. So you want to show respect for your roommate and get ahead of that by establishing what makes each of you uncomfortable. I suggest really thinking about this, maybe even writing it down. Maybe it's asking your roommate to do their dishes right away without them leaving them in the sink because it's a shared space and you like it clean and you want to avoid having dishes pile up with everyone neglecting to do them. Maybe it's asking to have a rotation of who buys the toilet paper or the paper towels, because then it could be a shared responsibility and you don't always have to guess who's up buying the next thing. Maybe you have a project you're working on or a test you're studying for and you need the house to be quiet. It could help to have a conversation with your roommate if you know they stay up late playing music or watching movies. You could see if they could use headphones that night, or you could go to a coffee shop or a library. It's a matter of compromising, having the conversation, setting the boundary. We don't need to make a big deal about it. These are basic components of living together. And if you have this conversation and you set these boundaries and your roommate still isn't honoring them, then you have another conversation and figure out how to navigate it from there. Maybe that roommateship really isn't meant to work out and you have a situation worth considering, but we can also recognize that the process is ongoing and we can't expect perfection right after conversation number one, but we can keep talking about it and getting better at it. Christy and I get into how she handled me battling an eating disorder while living together up next.
Before we started living together, you knew that I had an eating disorder because I've talked in the podcast already about how my eating disorder started when I was 13. You and I didn't start living together until we were 19 or 20. We, of course, had a very, very close friendship before we lived together, and you knew that I had an eating disorder, but I can only imagine that living with me and experiencing me engaging in eating disorder behaviors as we lived together was just a completely different ballgame than just having a friend suffering from one. So my question is, was it just always kind of noticeable from the get-go once we were living together that I had an eating disorder? I was still engaging in behaviors.
I don't think it was always noticeable, but I knew you and I knew that that was in there and I knew that that was always a possibility. It goes back to like how long we've known each other and just like both of our eating behaviors. So I knew that you had those behaviors.
Yeah, I think it's something that our friend group at the time kind of always knew about. And we had a lot of experiences together. We lost a friend in our friend group and that really kind of trauma bonded us in a way. And really just bonded us, and we were always together, and we were always, I think in a way because of that, more forgiving with anyone in the group, anyone's disordered behavior, whatever it was. It was almost like, okay, well, we've been through shit, so
yeah,
here's how we're coping with it. Looking back, is there anything you wish I would have done differently living with you? Like, do you wish I would have gotten help sooner?
I just wish you would have felt like you were able to talk about it and confided in me more. I just also wish you would have been honest, because I think at that time it was your knee-jerk reaction to lie about everything for whatever reason. So I just wish you would have been more open and honest about not just that, but just like everything, little things. How your day was,
oh my God.
Where you were going, who you were hanging out with.
Right.
I just wish you would have felt comfortable and felt like you were in a place where you could be open and honest.
So that's a little hard to hear. I was a liar. I talked in previous entries about growing up being a compulsive liar to escape this reality that was my childhood abuse. But having this conversation makes me realize just how much that line trickled from my youth into my young adulthood. And something Christy said is she wishes I would have been comfortable enough to have those hard conversations with her and let her know when I was struggling. And at the time, I couldn't even really admit to myself when I was struggling. I would lie to myself and to her about how I was feeling. Honestly, I lied to everyone about that. I think that's a symptom of my survival mode at the time. We know I was in a low spot mentally. In college, I would hang out with guys who treated me like shit, which is definitely a reflection of my self-esteem at the time. And of course, as a friend, Christy didn't approve, so I would just lie to her about not seeing a dude when I really was. I would also lie about taking her food. When I would have an episode, I would be very tunnel-visioned. When I was binge eating, I would eat whatever food was available, and a lot of the times it would happen to be her food. I would eat it, and then I would tell her it was molded or something, and I threw it away instead of just being honest with her and buying her new food. I had too much shame at the time to admit to her if I had an episode and I was low. It's so hard, but I really think if you can be honest with yourself, with your roommate, even with a therapist, it's going to get you one step closer to healing. My lying stopped when I started being honest with myself. The next tip that Samreen gives in her article from Balance for when a roommate is in eating disorder recovery is to take establishing boundaries a step further and set boundaries around food. This is usually vital to set in any cohabitated space. Someone who's struggled with an eating disorder is probably going to have a complicated relationship with food, and it's important to set a structure with your roommate about what food boundaries look like. Maybe you do share food. Maybe you have your own shelf that only has your food on it. Maybe you have a similar boundary when taking turns buying paper towels to take turns buying the eggs or the bread for the week, and you can share it. Maybe you can even be honest with your roommate that if you do struggle with food, both of you should know that there's no reason to feel shame or weirdness about that. Remember that there are reportedly 30 million Americans alone who have suffered from an eating disorder. This is more common than you think, so setting food boundaries is vital. The next tip Samreen gives is that as a roommate, understand that eating disorders can have a significant impact on someone's mood. She notes that being hangry is real. I'm sure all of us can relate to being hungry and very irritated and maybe snapping at someone. But scientifically, it's been proven that food and feelings are interlinked in so many scenarios. And because of this, disordered eating has a notable effect on an individual's temperament. I remember forcing my friends to leave my apartment without being able to give them a good explanation as to why. Or when Christy and I lived together, I would leave for days at a time and not really invest in the friendship at all. But I would just go back to my parents' house where I would have more privacy to engage in these numbing behaviors. Try to remember that your roommate's words or actions may not always reflect their true feelings, and being able to acknowledge that the eating disorder could be the reason behind their behavior can allow you to, one, see things from their perspective, but at the very least, not take things as personally. Next, we'll hear from Christy on what she wishes she would have done differently when we lived together.
In retrospect, it's so easy to see the things that could have gone better. I think the most important thing is to just, I wouldn't say confront it because you don't want to like be confrontational in an aggressive way, but have those conversations. You can suggest things for them to look into. Just open the door for communication. I mean, I don't think there's a right way to do it. I think every dynamic is different, and just maybe feel it out, but have the conversations.
That's a good segue into the last two tips Samreen gives in her article for when your roommate is in eating disorder recovery. And I just want to clarify, I think this article is relevant for someone at any point in their recovery or in their eating disorder. You know, it's not just for someone who's years into their recovery. I think there are a lot of good tips for anyone at any point in their journey. The fourth tip that Samreen gives is to be observant without being accusatory. A lot of the times, behaviors are going to be the most noticeable for someone you live with. We know that shame is such a major theme and can be a big reason why a roommate wouldn't let their roommate know they're struggling. I talk a lot about shame and how we can counteract that feeling in entry two. So if you're new here, definitely give that entry a listen because I no longer feel the weight of this shame bringing me down, and I can openly talk about my eating disorder without being embarrassed by it. If you notice a slip up with your roommate start to become a pattern, it might be a good time to show some concern, but otherwise try to trust that your roommate knows how to navigate through their disorder and maintain recovery. Christy had said that you don't want to confront your roommate in an aggressive way, but if you are concerned, have those conversations. Extend the olive branch. Ask them if they're feeling okay. Christy had also mentioned suggesting things for your roommate to look into. You could share this podcast with them. In entry six, I talk about my support group. They offer virtual groups online available for anyone in the world, and that's been a huge part of my recovery. I know it can feel like you're tiptoeing around their feelings, but remember that eating disorders can be deadly and you can literally help save their life. Finally, the last tip is to be cautious of comparison. Try avoiding pointing out differences in your eating habits or what you're eating or your body with that of your roommate. They're more than likely going to internalize that and take it super personally. Also, remember that their recovery is not your responsibility. You shouldn't sacrifice your mental health for the sake of your roommate. But by having the conversations and having the knowledge that eating disorders literally impact millions and don't need to be so stigmatized, it could allow you to empathize with your roommate more, and it could possibly even bring you closer. So that's the final tip from Samreen. To recap the tips she gave for someone who has a roommate in eating disorder recovery, they are 1, establish boundaries, 2, set food boundaries, 3, understand eating disorders have a significant impact on mood. 4, be observant without being accusatory. And 5, be cautious of comparison. And that's a wrap for segment 1. You're listening to entry 8 of the Eating Disorder Diaries with Amy Geckel, featuring my roommate Kristen Epling. And we'll be back right after this break with the second and final segment of the show. If you're like me and love podcasts, you've probably considered starting a podcast of your own. I can tell you that starting this podcast has been one of the most fulfilling things I've ever done. I use the website Buzzsprout to upload all of my shows and get my episodes listed in every major platform. Buzzsprout is hands down the easiest and best way to launch a professional podcast. When I conceptualized the idea of my podcast, I had no idea where to get started. I bought a mic, wrote some episodes, but then what? Buzzsprout has tons of guides to help get you started, from marketing your podcast to monetizing it to optimizing your SEO. You also get a website where you can link your social media handles and get detailed analytics to see how and where people are listening. Podcasting isn't hard when you have the right partners. Join over 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout to get started on your podcast. Following the link in the show notes lets Buzzsprout know I sent you and gets you a $20 credit if you sign up for a paid plan. Thanks for supporting the show, and let's create something great together. Welcome back to entry 8 of the Eating Disorder Diaries.
All right, segment number 2, arguably my favorite segment of the show when I have a guest, because I get to ask you 2 of my favorite questions. One is a recommendation, literally just anything that you're loving, and also a positive self-affirmation after that. So let's start. What's your recommendation?
My recommendation, I guess, is just like, make time for yourself and for the things that you enjoy, no matter how big or little they are. One thing for me is I like found a new hobby, and I've been making earrings out of clay, and it's like a time where I can just focus on that. And they involve precision and making sure they're even and they look the same, and I make a lot of like little lines in them, so it takes a lot of focus. And I think for me, that's something that's helpful. Like, I'm not a big journaler. I don't write. When I try to write, I get frustrated because nothing's coming to mind. So I think that's something that I found. And I think just finding what works for you is important, because it's going to look different for everyone. And I think not comparing what you're doing to someone else, it's just what works for you.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, side note, Christy and I have been talking, and she has these amazing earrings in, and I've been looking at them, and they have intricate lines in them, and they're great, like a great turquoise color. And what do you know? She was like, "Do you like my earrings?" And I was like, "Yeah, I've been looking at them the whole time." And she made them. So they're incredible. As soon as she has a shop, guys, online, I will link it so you guys can see it. But I really appreciate that recommendation. Maybe a tougher question. But what's something you love about yourself?
I think for the most part, I love that I'm able to go with the flow. Like, sometimes I'm hard on myself that I'm not more of a regimented person. And sometimes I wish that I was more organized and had more of like a definite timeline of when I want things to be done. But I actually enjoy that I'm able to go with the flow and that I can kind of adapt to whatever and have a mindset that like whatever I'm meant to be doing right now is exactly what I'm doing.
Christy, you're the type of friend that whenever we hang out, it's always like we can literally do whatever, whether it's just sitting on the couch and watching a movie or going on a walk and ending up at some random restaurant. Like, it's always chill. It's always a good time. You really are go with the flow. It is something I love about you too, so I'm glad that you recognize it. You've been amazing. I think this has been a really good conversation. I hope that it helps other people, but I think if anything, it helped us even just as we get older and are talking things out that were always left unsaid. So I really appreciate you coming on, and I think this is really great.
I just love her. We had a longer conversation offline, and I think sometimes I take the length of our friendship for granted because I know it will always be there, but having conversations like that really strengthens it. We went from having sleepovers every single weekend in high school to bailing someone out of jail in college. You didn't think I'd forget to add that in there, did you, Christ? And now we're fully blown adults in our 30s, doing our own thing, but still with so much love for one another. I hope you liked this episode. I will be back with a solo episode for entry 9 in 2 weeks. So tune into that. And if you liked this episode, please subscribe and come follow me on Instagram at The Eating Disorder Diaries. If you want to stick around, I've added a clip of Christy telling an embarrassing story of me from back in the day up next.
I mean, one of my, like, funniest memories of you wasn't funny to you.
Oh, no.
But it was the diving board.
Okay, tell it.
So we were at the pool at Michigan State, which, if you've ever been there, is like a Olympic size, like, big pool, and they open it to the public during the summer, and they have different heights of diving platforms. No, it wasn't a platform. It was a diving board, but they still have different heights. And Amy, being a dancer and all that kind of stuff, can do flips and stuff. So she thought that she could go to the high dive and do a flip off of it. And she did just that, only she overflipped. So she did probably the worst belly flop I've ever seen. And everyone at the same time at the pool goes, oh! And then everyone was just laughing, but she came out and she was in tears because her whole body was
welts
because it hurt her so bad. But so funny to me, not to you.
That's nice. This podcast was written and produced by me, Amy Geckel, with music from Coma Media and Coma Studio. You can follow the podcast on Instagram for updates at The Eating Disorder Diaries. And if you want someone to talk to, you can DM me or email me at TheEatingDisorderDiaries@gmail.com. Remember to take care of yourselves, and I'll talk to you in the next episode.